if you really want to get great at this business, just decide you're going to get to the target. It's like the ocean doesn't ask you. It just comes in and demolishes everything at high tide, right? There's nothing that can stop it. So it's like, if I'm going to get to Dave and his cell phone didn't work, then I'm going to email him. If that bounces, then I'm going to use an InMail. And if all three of those bounce, then I'm going to ask someone who's been on his podcast for his cell phone, or like, I'm going to get creative to get to the target. You know, it's like Napoleonic strategy of asymmetric warfare. There's so many ways in.
Welcome to the Leaders of B2B podcast, a weekly show where we bring you interviews and in-the-weeds expertise with today's B2B experts and thought leaders. You can see more about today's episode and guest by visiting our website at leadersofb2b.com.
Hey, leaders, welcome back. This is Ledge. I got a power-packed little short episode today. Really busy, important guy who's kind of like one of my LinkedIn heroes. I've been following Justin Michael for a long time, one of 56,000 people following Justin. He's been called the Obi-Wan Kenobi of opening conversations, the best sales coach in the world, as well as, and this is my favorite part, somebody who can provide mind-bending, thought-provoking ideas and methods. I have to say, Justin, I have lifted from you the phrase pattern interrupt, and I use it on a regular basis. I got to give you credit to that right away. But hey, we got 25 minutes. Let's rock and roll. It's awesome to have you. I know you have a lot to share with the audience. Jump on in. Tell me a story.
Yeah. So that's really interesting that you would talk about the mind bending part. I think about that movie Powder or whatever, where he bends the spoons.
That's the Matrix.
Yeah. I think there's another one called Powder where you can hold a spoon and bend it.
I'm laughing at this because I literally have labeled Powder one of the worst movies of all time. But if you think it's good, I'm down.
No, I think The Matrix is way cooler, but I don't teach any telekinesis. It's true. But just starting in on that pattern interrupt idea, it became clear to me. I started in mobile marketing business development in the late 2000s, really getting heavy into tech. 2006, fundraising SaaS, and then this company out of South Africa. And when I started looking at the business development techniques, it was like, hope you're doing well, bullet F curve tracking. And I'm thinking, if you send an email that requires an FI curve, isn't the email too long? And we're building all these mobile apps at this agency to compress SMS and short codes and all this stuff. And I'm like, why is our biz dev not mobile responsive when we're sending on the mobile phone? So that's like the first huge breakthrough, is just let's make all the classic prospecting stuff in the form factor of a mobile phone. So like, you know, emails that look like text messages, put the whole email in the subject line, which Oren Claff confirmed is a great one. You can even do a long one. Visual prospecting, right? Voice, compressed video. Like when someone in the community even did FaceTime drops, like you call C-levels, reverse engineer their FaceTime and just drop in, which is a complete wingsuited base jump, if you ask me. That takes real chutzpah. But I've just been thinking like Seth Godin in The Purple Cow. I'm just thinking, what can I do in the first 3 seconds of a call, in the 18 characters from the subject line, the preview text and email, that stands out, that's different, that gives a subconscious signal? And people don't even realize it. It just stands way out. Because if we go in your inbox right now and we look at all the vendors, it's just partnership, executive meeting request, synergy, partner, and it's just the same. So right. Yeah, I really busted out of that and built methodologies based on just provocation in a way. And it works well because you get the eyeballs, you get the open. And then it's the classic principles of strategic selling that kicks in. You still have to be able to create a narrative and a compelling value story, and you got to be able to sell, which my contention is SDR should learn full cycle sales, because what are they doing? I had these SDRs, I'm like, they're not getting show rates. So, well, we're not allowed to qualify. We're just the SDRs. They just sit there asking for meetings on Tuesday. They're like, if you don't have a pain or a latent pain or a reason or compelling event, why would they show up? You got to teach these SDRs how to do qualification.
And you do a lot of that work, right? I mean, you're walking into companies, they're clearly at least having the idea that they need to get better at this stuff. And you've been doing it for years. So it's interesting to hear you say, oh, well, here was the problem and the crappiness of outbound and in BD in 2006. I'm like, that's weird because it's exactly the same right now. So at least I guess you haven't trained all the people, but where does it start? I think that's painful to think 18 years later and I'm still getting emails that suck just as bad as 2006.
Yeah, it's true. So what's happened now is there's been this Cambrian explosion of sales tech and what I like to call the SDR AE industrial complex. So I know Aaron Ross, he's a friend, and the book Predictable Revenue is awesome. But just like any good idea, even democracy, it can be overwrought or overthought out, right? Like it's still not utopian. You get these basically like drone armies where everyone has gone just like drunk the Kool-Aid on the sequencer. And they're like, look, I've got five domains and I can send 500 emails a day. And then I've got this personalization and it automatically knows the Chinese food restaurant down the street. And their whole quest is just not to do the work. And you get an average result. You get this email that's noticed that you fundraised and that you're in marketing. And we work with marketing directors and we help them use AI to streamline their marketing. Oh, by the way, I love Madame Lou's down the street. So that's like the email. It's just, wow, that's so personalized. And the person reads it and goes, AI, like Dilbert style, right?
Sure you do.
It takes so much more than that now. So to beat the bots necessarily, you got to be like hyper-personalized. Like I would pull up David Ledge. Okay, Ledgerwood, goes by Ledge. Interesting guy. I'd watch your podcast. I would look at the first four pages of Google. I would look at image searches. I would look at events you did. I'd try to find something from 5 years ago, find something on resume. And I had this guy, he was a manager at HubSpot because I certified a bunch of reps there in five countries. And he was a champion rabbit breeder in Ireland. And I asked him, I was like, if I just put in the subject line, champion rabbit, you'd take the meeting. He's like 100%. Yeah. And no one on his team even knew this. But like, if this was my manager, that's like the first thing I know. Like, that's cool tidbit.
Maybe everybody can think of something on their resume that like you would open right away. Like, for example, if you told me, hey, I used to work with the RILA program with Rotary, you would know that's very meaningful to me to work on youth leadership programs. Yeah. And I'd be like, oh, hell yeah. In fact, I just did that the other day. Like I got cold call from a guy and say, hey, I saw RILA on your resume. I went to that. It was a really life-changing event for me. I'm like, oh, that's awesome. Tell me about what are you doing? What brings you to this call? I think that's huge. That actually feels like personalization.
Yeah. And I call it hyper-personalization. So this whole group of people goes, all the information is out there. So the buying's different, right? And it's true. You can look at the LinkedIn, but you can see on the LinkedIn what they want you to see. And the problem is we live in this matrixed world, probably matrix world too, to go by the beginning. But there's 11 decision makers. Did a deal with Luxottica, the glasses company, and the president had to sign off on a 10K pilot. I was shocked. The insider baseball, not insider trading, is you call someone, you get them to open up on the phone call, and they're like, oh, we just got a new CFO. I just let two members off the team. We have this new tech stack. All the inside stuff going on politically with the tech stack operationally is hidden. So you come in with all this research and hypotheses and you over-research, you write these long emails, you try to do all this hyper-personalization. The other thing we're missing is just human-to-human conversation, bumping into people, getting into natural conversations and getting them to trust you and just tell you what's going on behind the curtain.
But I was like, that's so much work. Shouldn't I just slam out emails?
It's way more work, right? But it's way more fun because it's more potent and people, you stand out. Right. I remember it was like this SVP, he was like, employee number 10 at Marketo, and he's now an SVP at this startup. And his phone number is in Zoom info and the databases. And he says, if he even gets a cold call, he'll take it and book the meeting. That's how little he gets called. And that kind of shocked me. And then I had another C-level who said, basically, everything is so templated that if it's even just a little better, he responds. Because it's literally a cookie cutter all day.
And so are you an advocate of a mix of outreach or like what everybody, I read the same LinkedIn things all the time. I know you have your method of outreach. You feel like that continues to be resolved. So obviously I'm leading to that question. A lot of people don't know how to outreach and they're afraid to use the phone or what about text message? And there's so many channels. I think there's like this ridiculous sort of paralysis and most people don't know how to even train other people in it.
It's true. So this guy, Santosh, the of retention.com, he showed his like his screen on his phone for missed calls. And it's just like, right, he's getting 15 of these calls a day from all the vendors. And he doesn't listen to any of the voicemails. Now, voicemails don't exist anymore because if I leave one for you, you get visual voicemails. So it actually comes out digitally while you have the phone off. So what we argued, Tony Hughes and I, in Convo Prospecting is it's really the saturation of omnichannel that gets you noticed. And this is a bee swarm effect. So I call you, leave a voicemail, send an email, connect on LinkedIn. ping you on Twitter and then you file the restraining order. But that doesn't actually happen. And I've checked this with a lot of people. You finally see it. It's Justin Michael screen, Justin Michael, Justin. It's like, oh, and you finally look at it. And intelligent people, if it's well-written and they look at their, oh, okay, yeah, let's look at this intent data. Let's check it out. And you stand way out because you've now showed up in this surround sound motion, this bee swarm. That's a way to use frequency and saturation and omni-channel blends and multi-threading to create confusion. And why is that good? Because what's not confusing is just loading the spam can in. Oh, I've got 200 VPs of e-commerce. What's the message? And everyone's obsessed on the message. First of all, you only can send 50 emails a day per domain. Gmail has rolled it back. So a vast majority of startups aren't even hitting the inbox at all. Be like you're shooting arrows into the trees. You don't even have the targets there. So the first thing I'm working on with companies is the RevOps issue of their security protocols, deliverability. Is their inbox okay? Are they whitelisted with the ISPs? Can they even get an email? You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. I don't really get offended if somebody just tries. I might still keep ignoring it, but I'm almost like, and maybe this is me in the sales seat. I'm like, hey, props, dude, like for not giving up, but also not doing it in like this completely obnoxious way. Like, how would I know about your thing if you didn't try to tell me? You'd be like, if you actually have something valuable, work your ass off to make sure I'm aware of it.
Yeah. So I always think it's ethical and moral to interrupt people if you actually have ROI and you can help them. Now, people have pushed really hard, like cold calling is dead and all these channels are spammy. And everyone needs to co-sell and do nearbound and partner channel and ecosystem. But the reality is in these markets, you get assigned 200 accounts or 500 accounts. You might have switched industries. You have no Rolodex, you have no network, and you have no team links. And there's no way except full frontal assault. And I say that in a loving way. You got to go direct. You got to just line up a list and get in touch, connect. And every sale happens within a conversation. Stephen Chandler says that. I just love that quote. It's so simple. But we're overthinking it. I mean, we're sitting in these platforms like clay.com, integrating the data sources, getting the spreadsheets, building all the AI personalization. We've crafted the ultimate measure. It looks so human. And 6 hours later, you could have done 6 hours of calls. You could have left 200 voicemails or something. And somebody, you could have already booked a meeting. And so I do think that motion's good, but it's more of a RevOps function and it's more of a marketing analyst. The metric that I have my teams that I coach over index on are completes. I get a group together of 10, 20 reps to say, okay, how many human beings did you talk to last week? Because the statistics like salespeople spend 35% of their time selling, but it's even crazier than that. Very few say over 5.
Right.
And I'm even counting DMs. I'm saying like, so you're on LinkedIn and you message them, they message you, you message them. There's like a volley.
Right.
Or you get them on the phone for a cold call. It's not just like not interested. Like you have a meaningful back and forth in a channel in real time. That's a complete human to human. If you can take that number and turn it to 10.
Right. A lot of people count connects, which is some human picked up and told you to F off.
Like, it's you pick up and say, I'm busy. That's not exactly, oh, one, I got a call. No, it's like the fish hit a hook and went away. So if you can double that number, it's really powerful. Because that's where all the pipeline has always come from, is like real conversations. My techniques are designed to create more completes. And I always say be the most venomous snake in the Australian outback because the connect rates are so low. If like someone talks to you, it's really hard to get at bats. That's why things like Connect and Sell and Aurum and these power dialers, like it's not the best prospect experience. Maybe they're getting a lot of phantom calls. But if reps can sit down and talk to 10 or 20 people a day, they get a lot more confidence. With objection handling and unique value proposition, tailoring, talking to the C-suite, just the confidence, the tone. It's hard now because back in our day, you could sit down, call 10 numbers, 7 people picked up.
Right.
Everyone had executive assistants. There's just a whole engine for receiving calling. And now like these tech companies, you just get a main phone line. You can't even get through. It's pretty crazy.
So if I actually wanted to have a good data source to call people's cell phones, like what would that be? Like, how do you even put together such a thing?
There's two ideas here. One, cell phone data is really rare because I think people work really hard to keep it out of the system. So like the massive data providers might have a smaller percentage of cell phones. Things like LeadIQ have cell phones, ZoomInfo has cell phones, Cognizant. They even have services now to verify the phone numbers so they can pre-call the phone number with an offshore team or nearshore with software, they can confirm number accuracy. But at the end of the day, the connectin cell research was crazy because even to this day, like on 10 million dials, 50% of the meeting set were fully navigated, meaning they're talking to executive assistant. It's a dial by name directory. So especially if you're doing like mid-market and enterprise, a lot of those dial by name directories still work. And in combo prospecting, the whole name of the game is just to leave four or five voicemails, adding value every time, personalizing it, getting your voice on the phone as part of a multi-touch, like a triple call, voicemail, email, having a running sequence, but dropping voicemails, doing LinkedIn voice notes, doing LinkedIn video on top of it, the omni-channel blend in various methods. It's a ton of work, but what else are you going to do? Most reps, prospects less than an hour a day. Do two. And back in my day, you sit in a folding chair and wait to talk for 14 hours. It's insane. Red Bull, and you have, it's not better. It's not humane, but we'd have competition. We get up at 3 a.m. in California and just dial till 5 p.m. till we were like Ren and Stimpy cartoons just melting into the desk. Brute force.
And so you talk about that with nostalgia. How does that translate? Because you had, essentially you had this, and you used war metaphors and aggressive metaphors when you talk, is that the attitude different? Because A, it doesn't sound fun anymore, the way everybody bitches about it. And B, it doesn't sound hungry. And what is that? Because that has nothing to do with method. Although, is there a work ethic problem?
I don't know. I don't want to sound like typecasting because there's kind of hunters and farmers, but like I was more of a strategic account executive Salesforce, and I just love to hunt. I love to chase after business and get into these impossible accounts. I've done deals with some of the most famous companies just out of sheer persistence. I've called people 200 times. It's just crazy type stuff. So I always talk in my books about the honey badger. I just love this animal. And it's just like these great gifts where it like climbs over the fence, crosses the lawn, opens the back door, gets to the kitchen, opens the fridge. This animal is so smart. So it's, if you really want to get great at this business, just decide you're going to get to the target. It's like the ocean doesn't ask you. It just comes in and demolishes everything at high tide, right? There's nothing that can stop it. Yeah. So it's, if I'm going to get to Dave and his cell phone didn't work, then I'm going to email him. If that bounces, then I'm going to use an inmail. And if all three of those bounce, then I'm going to ask someone who's been on his podcast for his cell phone, or I'm going to get creative to get to the target. It's like Napoleonic strategy of asymmetric warfare. There's so many ways in. And I was just a master of like having 200 accounts, the CRO would assign it, and I'd have an answer on all 200. And like, how did you do this? Because I would find someone, I'd call HR, I'd call reception, I'd call the sales team, I'd figure it out. And I would get a human on the phone and say like, look, here's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get in front of your CMO and sell them this. And great stories about these two office companies merge. I've told this in interviews before. And I looked at People Also Viewed because I had called this chief digital officer probably, I don't know, 24 times. His title was VP of Financial Planning Analysis. This Jamaican guy, he answers first call. I think I got his phone number out of Zoom Info or something, Discover work back then. I explained the whole value post. This is great. You should tell the CEO. I'm like, yeah, I can't get in front. So here's the sell. So then I call the chief digital officer, Fortune 100, leave the voicemail, tailor it, nothing. Then I go into my own CEO's profile and send a message from the CEO. And we landed a meeting. We were on site three weeks. We did a deal, like a six-figure, like it all came together.
Right.
Because of that kind of ingenuity. Another great one is I got a meeting with a CMO of a massive hotel chain. I was in mobile marketing. I had a geofencing technology I talk about in the book. I saw a quote by her in Wired magazine. So I just called her, navigated the phone directory, left a message for her Friday night, East Coast time, probably 7 p.m. I put the quote from Wired in the subject line. And then I left a message about it. And probably within, I don't know, like 15 minutes, she got back Friday night after hours. And loops in someone from England. And then I did the same technique on that veteran in England, and I ended up getting an on-site meeting in Plano, Texas. So, right, it's the ocean. It's just the honey badger just getting to the target, the persistency and navigating and the detective work and just really hunting and going after those breadcrumbs. And you can still do that. Like the medium changes, the message doesn't. It's that intentionality just to be anti-fragile and to keep going. By any means, you got to be respectful and have a lot of finesse the whole time because you're jumping over the wall. You're getting into the organization. You got to sweet talk the EAs. You got to be politically savvy to pull this stuff off. You can't go in and I had a client the other day. He goes, I just called the executive assistant and say there's been a change in your tea time. Well, that'll only work so many times, right?
Something is definitely interruptive. I'm not sure that's valuable. But so I noticed this when we talked and you were cool enough to reach out to me. I'm like, wow, like this dude who like I follow, like actually wants to talk to me. That's cool. Thank you. So props for that. And then I noticed that you have a timbre and a tone that of your voice is it's narrow band. Like, so like you're automatically disarming when you talk. I try to do the same thing in my own sales. And I wonder, did you cultivate that? Or is that you? You know?
Yeah. What I found is the minute I saw anybody in sales was like the Cardone Belfort, the showman, which is entertaining. And I love their work and I've learned a lot, but it works well in real estate and cars. It works well in a lot of sales situations. But there's another persona and you call him as, hey, great to talk to you. He's fired up. You'd be like a little nervous, like my retainer's 10 grand. You'd be like, if you go see a doctor and they get excited because you're sick, or that would be good. Or like someone flying a plane and you hear turbulence and they go, whoop, that was some. So I love the Belfort stuff, like enthusiastic. He's doing like tone changes every 3 seconds. End of the day, like I sold shoes at Nordstrom, right? I'm calm. I'm calm. I calm people down. Then they can make decisions. It's just trusted advisor to me. The people I trust the most with big decisions, consider purchases, are calm. And I like that. So that's the tone I chose. And I didn't ever see in any of the sales vernacular neutrality. I call it like air traffic control or monotone or like the sharpshooter, like the biathlete voice, golf commentator.
I always thought of it, I call it calm confidence. It's look, I'll help you out. I'll give you good information. If this is a great situation for you, awesome. If it's not, it's great to talk to you. Like, it's just like almost, I don't care if you buy this, you might care if you don't. And you should just get some information here. And we're like, it will not make a difference to me whatsoever if we get off this call and do nothing. And I think people believe that. And I believe it because I always believe in the fact that there's going to be a next call. Always. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, like that's my version of that. But it stood out to me right away. I was like, oh, I get that. And I think people are closer aware of that other personality in it. And it actually is like a natural defense technique.
So when I go in, I'm really trying to do that Zen Cohen of sell without selling. So what can I ask? What can I listen? And can I inspect the person I'm talking to? Some of the Chris Voss stuff is great with labeling and mirrors, but if you get so good at human interactions and communications over decades of the stuff that you just, it's like the Matrix where the bullets slow down and you're analyzing the person and figuring out how to mirror them or be a mirror, like the beats per minute, how fast the NLP stuff is really powerful.
NLP is awesome.
Yeah. So it's just, it's really being aware and putting all the focus on them. I wrote this, I put it in the books, but the other orientation of not what am I going to say to pitch and how am I going to position, but it's like, how can I get the attention off myself as the vendor and the seller and just put all the spotlight on the prospect? Jay Abraham said, if you're the most interested person in the world, you're the most interesting. Dale Carnegie thing, but like that really works. And so I just get really curious and I ask questions about people. And I'm not talking about like the Chris Farley, like, you know, they have a river rafting picture on the wall or like the bass. I'm like, hey, great fish. Like, I guess I don't know where I heard this, but some senior executive had fake pictures of his family and like a water rafting trip that wasn't him just to mess with traveling salespeople. So we were on the call the other day and literally the sales leader who was probably in his 60s was explaining how you got to make sure to mention what's on their wall. And I was just like, such a dinosaur old school thing, right? Because people are busy. They don't want Facebook friends and they have burning pains and objectives. They have 7 slots, like Mike Bosworth says. And my whole thing is just to figure out what their highest priority is, their North Star, and then just dive really deep into the top thing on their mind. And they forget that they're on a sales call.
Fantastic. Well, I love it. We're running out of time, as I knew we would do. And I know you have the next thing. Talk about your books. I think everybody should go out and get that. Obviously, follow Justin Michael on LinkedIn because his stuff is awesome. But yeah, how can everybody start to mind meld with you?
Thanks for that. Yeah. So if you just follow Justin Michael on LinkedIn or on Amazon, and I'm really well known for this book called Tech Powered Sales, which was the sequel in a way to Predictable Revenue. And I'm grateful to Aaron Ross for paving the way. My new books are called The Justin Michael Method. It's a series. You can't miss it on LinkedIn. There's 600 reviews on these things. They have bright covers. And I also have some like codex guides that I put out that are like little cheat codes and they're free and you can find them in different places. I've dropped them like Easter eggs around Reddit and here and there. So yeah, excited to connect, and reviews save lives. I always say that. Us authors, really, we put way too many hundreds of hours into stuff. Never write a book, and I keep writing. So yeah, that's my advice.
Well, Justin, man, I sure appreciate you coming out, and thanks for all the wisdom. And I just look forward to sponging up more of what you got.
Thanks, Ledge. It's a pleasure. And thanks to everyone viewing, and we'll talk soon.
Thank you for listening, and we hope you enjoyed this episode of the Leaders of B2B podcast. And as always, you can see more information about this episode and all the resources mentioned at .com. If you enjoyed the show, please give us a 5-star rating. This episode is brought to you by Content Allies. We help B2B companies launch revenue-generating podcasts. We schedule interviews between you and your ideal prospects and strategic partners. You show up for engaging conversations, we handle everything else. Ready to build a podcast that grows your business in just 1 hour per week? Reach out to us at contentallies.com.